You're listening to Pacifica's Peace Watch. I'm Verna Avery Brown. This is a show about peace, promoting it, preserving it, and monitoring those who would seek to destroy it. Valeria Randall and Jessica Margolis Apineo, two young ladies from Portland, Maine, spent a day wandering the halls of their public high school, looking to opinions on the situation confronting us in Iraq. Both have been active members of WMPG's Blunt Youth Radio Project for 2 years.
It was a controversial election, so I wasn't surprised by the widespread criticism of George W. Bush. He was just a funny little rich boy with poor public speaking skills. Maybe I should slow down. Perhaps at this moment, you're wondering, who is this girl on the radio dissing my president? Or maybe you're thinking, hey, this is one cool chick. I must admit that I do tend to think of myself as a cool chick. And let's just say that if I had been old enough to vote in the last presidential election, I wouldn't have voted for Bush. My name is Val. I'm an 18-year-old high school senior in Portland, Maine. As tragic as the September 11th attacks were, they did bring a sense of unity to the American people, and the cynical mockery of our president seemed to cease momentarily. However, it is now over a year later, and Bush is pushing to attack Iraq. Based on personal conversations and observations, it seems to me that the nation is once again divided. I had assumed that everyone has some sort of comment on the situation in the Middle East, especially those outspoken, opinionated teenagers. So I set out with recording equipment in hand for the crowded halls of Deering High School. The 1,200 students at Deering here in Portland are mostly white kids from middle-class families. The school is, I think, the type of oh-so-average, stereotypical American high school that we see so often on TV. As I went in with my microphone, I was expecting to hear the enthusiastic voices of the oh-so-average youth. Unfortunately, that wasn't always the case.
How do I feel? Think it's good? Because Iraq is dumb. I don't know. That's the way I feel.
No comment.
Sure.
How would you feel if you got drafted?
Pretty good. I'm going in anyway, so it doesn't really matter.
Wouldn't like it.
I think it's awful. I think we're jumping into it too quickly, and that we're sort of imperialistic, and we're just moving way too fast. There are other ways to solve it.
I don't have anything to say. I don't know anything about it.
My dad thinks that we should go to war with Iraq. Well, I'm not really for war, I guess. I'm not really into fighting.
I'm not for peace. I don't know the whole issue, but from what I hear about, what's our president?
George.
I think George Bush is being very unfair on, like, because he's going after Iraq and totally leaving North Korea because he wants to try to make some alliance with them.
I think about the possibility. I think that there is a possibility of some. I think that U.S. troops are gonna fix anything that happens before anything breaks out.
So how do you feel about the situation?
I think, frankly, it is not cool. I think that George Bush is making a mistake in attacking Iraq, even though they may be a threat or whatnot, but I think he's just on a power trip. And I believe that by him doing so, we'll just make it so we'll have problems with other countries, because then people will be like, well, America just wants to kill everybody, and then everybody will hate us, and then we won't have any friends, and then it'll be hard for us to travel.
You know what? Yeah, I thought that was over with. This should be. I mean, well, who are we to bully around everybody? That's just like what the Muslims did to us.
I must admit I was puzzled by the lack of intelligent voices. I personally have very strong opinions about U.S. military intervention in Iraq. While I do believe that Saddam Hussein shouldn't be leading a nation, I definitely don't think it's up to the U.S. to remove him. An unbiased force should take charge, such as the United Nations. If I'm so opinionated, why aren't my peers? Why is it that my schoolmates sound so ignorant?
Because it doesn't interest me.
I don't really want to know what's happening right now, since like my dad's in the military, and I really don't want to know what's going to happen to him when stuff.
I don't really like follow the news that much. I just like basically watch it with my dad to see what's going on in the world, and that's like about it.
I don't know that much about it. That's true, but I don't really care.
I blame the Howie person.
Because I'm not worried about it.
Don't have enough time to follow the news.
Do you consider this important, or are you?
I think it's important, but I just don't have any time at all.
Well, I kind of like to know more about it, but like watching the news and stuff, like I really don't have a whole lot of time to sit down and read the paper and things like that. So, I mean, I'd just kind of rather be undecided about it and just really not have an opinion, because I don't really see the point in having one right at this point. But then again, I don't really know much about it at all. So,
how would you feel if you got drafted?
I think that would suck.
So much for angry youth. Well, a few guys at least had a plan.
I worry about it. I'm not going to war.
You're not worried about being drafted if we go to war?
No, I'm not worried.
That's why they invent Canada.
Yeah, I was going to say, I'll just leave Canada.
I'd go to Canada.
Oh, Canada.
Maybe when the bombs start falling, more kids will have something more to say than this.
I plead the fifth.
For Pacifica's Peace Watch, this is Valerie Randall with assistance from Jesse Margolis-Pinio.
Not all adults, young adults, are as apathetic. At the anti-war rally in Washington, D.C. last weekend, a huge youth contingent of thousands of teenagers throughout the D.C. metropolitan area joined with children of longtime peace activists, new protesters, and some 400 college and high school students who mobilized nationwide for the protests. Many attributed the success of this mobilization to Howard University student Peter Lindsay of ANSWER, Act Now to Stop War and End Racism.
Today we have come together, people from all different ages and backgrounds, braving the cold and their attempts to silence us, to demand that there be no war on Iraq. We are a truly historic movement, one that struggles not just for peace, but for an end to racism, brutality, and exploitation. We are a movement that stands in solidarity with the people of the world. We understand that as long as there is hunger, as long as there is poverty, as long as there is division and exploitation and domination at the hands of the U.S. government, there can be no peace for the people of the world. We will organize, we will demonstrate, we will struggle, and we will fight until we have laid the foundation for justice, the true groundwork for peace. As we speak, George Bush is preparing to send a new generation of young men and women to fight and die for his unjust war overseas. And yet, I am standing here today before thousands of young people that have come to D.C. to show the Bush administration that we will not fight his war for big oil. We are not the executives of Exxon and Mobil, and we know that this war is not in our interest. We know that the people of Iraq are not our enemies. We know that the money that is used to pay for Bush's military toys is money that is being taken out of our public schools and our scholarships. George Bush cannot tell us that he is fighting for freedom abroad, because we know that he is the enemy of freedom here at home. As they plunder our social programs, take away our rights, and force millions of people into devastation, I ask, what do they care about freedom? We stand here today, a new generation of anti-war activists, to say that we will not let them carry out this war. We will not let them send our brothers and sisters to kill and be killed in the name of a freedom we have never known. This is just the beginning. We will stop this war! No blood for oil! No blood for oil! No blood for oil!
Peter Lindsay, youth and student organizer for Act Now to Stop War and End Racism. Thanks to Reem Kathuda, Matt Bradley, Sarah Durham, Luzette King, and Errol Maitland from WBIX.org, Refugees and Exiles Radio Network, for this segment. The Iraq Pledge of Resistance, a national organization that recruits Americans to commit civil disobedience to protest the impending war against Iraq, has just completed a week of demonstrations. Peace Watch producer Dave Lipman interviewed Gordon Clark, national coordinator of the pledge, about the prospects for increased militance in the face of U.S. saber rattling.
virtually every single one of the 47 cities where this is being organized, there will be massive CD in the event of an actual war against Iraq. I know that something over 10,000 people have signed the Pledge of Resistance across the country, and I think that we can expect a lot of them to participate in it. There are places where people have been arrested doing nonviolent CD, and a few of them that I just mentioned a few moments ago. There are also places where they are doing everything they can to avoid arresting people who are committing acts of civil disobedience, sometimes treating those people nicely, as I observed today here in Raleigh, sometimes roughing those people up, as I observed in Washington, D.C., as I experienced, I should say, in Washington, D.C. this past Sunday. I think the important thing for people to realize who are doing this, and whether or not it's a coordinated plan on the part of police departments to not arrest people, is that, to use the words of Mahatma Gandhi, the job of a civil resistor is to provoke a response. And clearly, if we are taking actions that the authorities are unwilling to respond to, it's our obligation, I believe, as civil resistors, to escalate our nonviolent tactics so that we can provoke a response. And this, of course, is not a desire simply to go to jail. No one are taking these actions simply so that they can get arrested. We are taking these actions to make the strongest possible statements against the war in Iraq, to show the American public and the rest of the world that this country is far from united in terms of this drive to war. So to get that message out through acts of nonviolent civil disobedience, clearly we need to be planning to escalate those tactics in places where police are simply refusing to respond by arresting people who are engaging in such acts. I believe that history shows us that there's something very powerful in civil disobedience, that when people see someone else who is standing up nonviolently, and that's a big part of it, when they see someone who's standing up nonviolently, who's willing to take a huge personal risk, I think that calls on something very deep in the human spirit to say, there is something just in what these people are doing, and we should join them. So I do think that as part of this civil disobedience, you will see the actions generating more people taking those actions and generating more people involving in the protests. What timeline it will happen on is hard to say. What timeline the Bush administration has for any potential war in Iraq, it's hard to say. But I am convinced that the ability of any people to involve themselves in nonviolent CD is what will provoke and promote more people to be involved in it, whether they come from mainstream church groups or whether they're not religiously involved or whether they are, in fact, Republican businessmen or, you know, other groups. Even if they didn't speak out against previous wars, they are seeing this proposed war as such a violation of any basic standard of common decency, you know, any basic standard of common law and human interaction, whether it's on a personal level or an international level, that this is what I think is motivating them to act out, in addition to the domestic issues. For many of the church groups that I know and talk with, it's an accumulation of actions on the part of the Bush administration, that it's not only this war, but they see a Bush administration which is anti-affirmative action, which is cutting back on domestic programs, which is giving tax breaks to the wealthy, and which seems clearly willing to spend $100 billion or hundreds of billions of dollars on war when they claim there is no money for any number of domestic needs. So I think when you look at groups, I mean, and as Martin Luther King himself observed, you know, war is ultimately a war on the poor. Because, in fact, it takes the resources that the poor in this country would need to lift themselves up out of poverty. So I think that's a very strong factor for a lot of the churches that I know who are now engaging in not only protests but in some cases acts of civil disobedience. The folks out in Milwaukee, Wisconsin were very clear that, and the ministers who got arrested there, that that was part of their motivation. The other thing, though, I do think it comes from a moral sense. And a belief, and I think this is something, by the way, that is affecting most Americans, that, you know, even though the polls say whatever, 50% still support a war, I think that support, however broad it might be, is an inch or even less than an inch deep. I think there's also certainly a current in this country where it's like we don't care what the rest of the world thinks, but when there's an action taking place where people feel uncomfortable enough already with, as many people, I would argue the majority of people in this country feel about the war with Iraq, and they see that the rest of the world is pretty much lined up against what we're doing, yeah, I think it has a really big cumulative effect in just, you know, waking people up and saying, wait, there has got to be something terribly wrong with what we're doing. It's under the surface. You don't see it openly debated, but I think most Americans understand that oil plays at least a significant role, if not the predominant role, in any war against Iraq. And once again, that makes it illegitimate. I think most people, you know, are not willing to support a war simply so that American corporations can have access to Iraqi oil.
Gordon Clark, National Coordinator of the Pledge of Resistance. President Bush's war on terrorism has spawned a propaganda renaissance in America. Pacifica Station KPFK's Sonali Kolhatkar spoke to illustrator Micah Wright about his efforts to put an anti-war spin on Cold War-era government propaganda posters and his thoughts as a veteran of the Panama War on a possible war with Iraq.
Basically, what I've been doing is taking World War II propaganda posters, repainting them to take out the old text, and then putting in new text using the same fonts and the same colors and the same layout to reflect a new message, an anti-war message or an anti-Bush message or an anti-corporate greed message or an anti-SUV message, that sort of thing. You're dealing with this fantastic, iconic art, and there's very few artists like that anymore who can actually draw that style any longer, but you're talking about really fantastic, iconic art that is of a man jumping from a bomber with holding his parachute and his rifle, and you know he's leaping out. And it used to say, you know, buy war bonds, and now it says invest in invasion, reelect George Bush.
And what's interesting about this is that, in a sense, this is propaganda being resurrected and slanted in the opposite direction. Would you describe your posters as propaganda as well?
Oh, yeah, most definitely. It's what I call subverted propaganda. Or remixed propaganda for the kids. You know, it struck me as very funny to actually just spend some time taking a look at the messages that they were giving off and then completely and utterly undercut those messages with an ironic commentary about the times that we live in today.
Absolutely. They're definitely very ironic. And in fact, for listeners who are unable to or who may not have actually even seen World War II posters, some of our younger listeners, you can actually check them out visually on their website, on Micah Wright's website at www.micahwright.com. And I'll spell that. It's MICAHWRIGHT.com. And you can see examples of Micah's artwork on that website while you're listening to the show. One of the interesting aspects about your work is that you're an artist who has a very interesting background, especially in the military itself. And these are military icons you're working with, but you have personal experience in the military. Can you describe for our listeners what
that
is? Sure.
Yeah, I was an Army Ranger for 4 years. I participated in the Operation Just Cause, the invasion and liberation of Panama.
Was it a liberation?
I don't know. It depends on what you're trying to liberate. If you're trying to liberate the capital of the country and send it north to North America, I guess it was liberation.
In this time, in this day and age, after September 11th of 2001, we are finding ourselves at a time when there's so much pressure to be patriotic, to stand behind the flag, to, you know, fly a flag, et cetera, not question the president. How has your artwork been received by the public?
I get like two different types of mail. The first piece of mail that I get is somebody from Ohio or Texas or Arkansas saying, you know, thank God. I thought I was the only one. I'm so glad to see your art. I feel like there's other people out there who understand what I'm trying to think, and you've articulated my feelings in such a funny way. That's the first piece of mail I get, and I love that piece of mail. The second piece of mail I get is it's a derivation of you are a traitor, you are betraying America, you know, you don't like it, go back to Russia, you know, you don't like it here, you know, move to, you know, wherever. Most of the time they don't even name a country because they can't think of a country where, you know, why don't you move to Iraq? I get that a lot, you know. Mm. You think it's so bad here, why don't you move to Iraq? It's like, well, whatever, you know. And I love those pieces of mail too. I love it all. The more negative mail generally is pretty poorly spelled and has really bad grammar. And so I think we know who we're talking about here.
Do you think that your experience in the Army has made you a better judge of the motives of this country's leadership?
Oh, yeah.
In what way?
Standing in Panama City in Christmas of 1989 and watching a huge chunk of it burn to the ground. You know, we set fire to a slum there and, you know, made hundreds of thousands of people homeless and killed Lord knows how many. And, you know, just standing there and watching that and just thinking, you know, what are we even here for? It doesn't make any sense at all. And, you know, basically you get back to the States and, you know, I told my grandparents, I said, oh, did you see me on TV, you know, during the war? And they literally said, what war? What are you talking about? Like my grandparents, you know, they're elderly, but they're not disengaged from reality. They had no idea that the United States had gone to Panama and had conducted this gigantic war. And they had, when I saw videotape of like the news coverage later, it became quite apparent why. It was like a relatively minor story to people here in the United States. But for those of us there, you know, we were demolishing that country.
Also, some people compare the invasion, the U.S. invasion of Panama to the Iraqi invasion of Kuwait in 1991.
Oh, yeah. A lot of people believe that one of the reasons we went to Panama was to seize control of the Panama Canal. The 1977, I think it was, Panama Canal Treaty had a clause in there that we're giving you back the Panama Canal in the year 2000. It will be yours. And, you know, in very small print, it said somewhere in there, unless you don't have an Army, Navy, and Air Force big enough to defend the Panama Canal. And, you know, one of the things that we did when we were there in Panama was go through and utterly demolish their Army, Navy, and Air Force. You know, we put satchel charges in the engines of all their jet planes, even though we totally owned their, you know, we had complete control of their airport. And there's no way anybody could take off on those planes. You know, we demolished their version of the Pentagon. You know, we raided all of their equipment and, you know, destroyed it. I mean, we utterly destroyed their military infrastructure. And when you think about it, well, what other possible reason could there be for that other than when we are gone, we don't want them to have an army and an air force and a navy necessary to support the Panama Canal. I mean, whether or not that's true, I have no idea. But it certainly, I wouldn't put it past anybody that was in the Bush administration.
And you left the Army Rangers. When did that happen? And eventually, why did you leave it? What were the reasons?
Well, they were downsizing the military. I don't remember if anybody remembers that back when they were downsizing the military.
But, wow.
they were downsizing the military. They came through and they said, look, if there's anybody here who is not utterly 100% committed, we'd like you to leave because we don't want to lose people who are, this is their career. This is their, you know, lifers. We don't want to lose lifers in order to hold on to somebody who's only going to be here for another 5 or 6 years. So I volunteered to go out. I took an early discharge.
Now, back to what's happening today. After the horrific attacks of September 11th, we've seen this country go in a very, very, in a particular direction that has global implications. And we're on the edge of a definite war with Iraq. Every indication shows there's going to be a war. We've just sent over thousands of Marines. What are your thoughts on this direction as an artist and also as an ex-Army person?
Well, I mean, there's going to be a war no matter what. I don't think there's anything anybody in this country can do to stop that war. It's sad. It's pathetic. But unfortunately, I think it's true. No matter how many marches we have, no matter how many times we call our elected representatives, George Bush has set his mind on invading Iraq, and that's what's going to happen. That's really depressing on the one level because you feel like, well, there's nothing I can do to stop it. It's going to happen no matter what. And then on the level, it energizes you to try to help other people see what's going on. And, you know, it seems utterly obvious to me that no matter what, there's going to be a war. But, you know, to many of my family members, they really believe George Bush's story that he's going to wait and he's going to see what the UN inspectors have to say. And although he's gone back on that several times already, you know, he changes his story every week, why we're going to invade. So, you know, if the United Nations inspectors return and say, well, we didn't find a single, you know, weapon of mass destruction, whatever that means, in all of Iraq, and, you know, we interviewed all of the Iraqi scientists, and we did this, and we did that, then he'll pull something else out of his hat as an excuse to invade Iraq. He wants Saddam gone, and there are very good reasons that Saddam should be gone, but is that our job to be the world's policeman? And I personally, I don't think it is.
Illustrator Micah Wright, speaking with KPFK programmer Sonali Kolhatkar. An estimated 100,000 people are expected to participate in the third annual World Social Forum, which began today in Porto Alegre, Brazil. The forum is an open meeting of members of civil society and leaders of non-governmental bodies who oppose neoliberalism. This year's discussion of building a planetary society based on human rights includes growing opposition to U.S. imperialism and war. From Porto Alegre, Brazil, Renee Feltz and Monica Lopez report.
At today's opening ceremonies, World Social Forum organizers had a welcoming message that emphasized a strong opposition to U.S. policies leading the world into war.
We are here in Porto Alegre, the World Social Forum, as farmers, as feminists, as students, old, young, women, men, black, brown, red, yellow, and white peoples of the world who come to a place to find a place of struggle and a place where alternatives are lived, highlighted, and prioritized. It's a far from perfect space, but it is a space in struggle. We are the global justice movement, not the anti-globalization movement, because we support the kind of globalization represented at the World Social Forum, people-to-people globalization.
A just-completed global public opinion poll conducted for the forum reveals the majority of people across the world think society should address social problems like militarization before worrying about economic growth. A survey evaluating trust in world leaders to manage challenges of the coming year rated U.S. leaders lowest. 4 in 10 of the 15 countries surveyed said the terrorist attacks of September 11 caused their trust in government leaders to decrease. The forum survey showed trust has shifted to leaders of non-governmental bodies. Organizers spoke of the prospect of war now shaking up the already unstable world situation.
We are creating a new political praxis, basing on the respect for diversity, democracy, and on the absolute will to journey together with other people in order to be stronger against a powerful system which is even capable to, which for us is a fundamental concern, which is capable of bringing the world to war. You will see in the demonstration that will go out on the streets that we are all opposed, all forum participants, as all people of common sense throughout the world, we are opposing anything to happen in this scheduled war.
The motto of the opening march of the Third World Social Forum will be the construction of another possible world against militarism and war. This piece was produced by KPFT reporters Monica Lopez and Renee Feltz with the help of the Brazil Independent Media Center. We'll have more from the World Social Forum on Peace Watch tomorrow. Pacifica's Peace Watch is produced in Washington, D.C. by Scott Gurian. Our editor is Lona Elias. Our engineer is Granger Helvey. We had production assistance from Emil Hamad of KPFA, Keith Chalgion, Reem Kathuda, Benta Berkland, and Brian DeShazer of the Archives. Thanks to Pete Karakis, RadioForAll.net, and Shane Rock at WebActive.com for web help. If you'd like to support this type of programming, we urge you to visit Pacifica.org and make a pledge through our secure online website. Or you can send your donations to Pacifica Radio, 2390 Champlain Street Northwest, Washington, D.C., 20009. We'd love to hear your thoughts on the show. Send us your feedback to peacewatch@pacifica.org. I'm Verna Avery Brown. Thank you for listening.